The next two ratios, the current ratio and the quick ratio, are meant to detect the sufficiency of working capital. You're going to need a definition of working capital. Technically, it's supposed to be the difference between your current assets and current liability. That's what working capital is. If you put it in a personal finance context, the best way of thinking about working capital is it's the amount of cash and stuff that you keep around in the house to make it so that it doesn't matter if a bill comes in or your paycheck's a little bit late. It smooths things out. It's supposed to be the grease. So you can think of it as the lower bound that you put in your checking account to make sure everything works out well as like all the canned food that you have, things that are stuck in the freezer, and like toilet paper, stuff like that. One of the things you'll notice about the sufficiency of working capital is that the scales can be very, very, very different across people as well as across firms. And if you go around the classroom, you may go ahead and ask, well, how much do you like to keep in your checking account as the lower bound? And some people will say like $100. Some people will say like $10. But you do have some other people who will give you numbers like, oh, $1,000 or $10,000 for whatever reason, just because, you know, bad things have happened to them. The main reason that you're going to see for these big differences is it has to do with having your expenses and your revenue not being correlated with each other. It means you want to hold a larger amount of working capital. And when they are strongly correlated with each other, you can go ahead and hold a relatively smaller amount. So one of the things that you may notice is that a lot of you get your paychecks monthly, and the paychecks come at just about the same time as all your bills. And so you keep relatively small amounts in your checking account throughout the month as the minimum amount. It's probably being held elsewhere earning interest. And then at the end of the month, this jump that you have in your revenue coming in, that's your paycheck, is very closely correlated with this jump in expenses. And so this is when things like rent is going to be due and all your bills are due. So when they're really correlated with each other like this, you don't need to keep a whole bunch of working capital around. Now, other folks don't have this. They may go ahead and, say, earn a little bit of income every single day. You can think about somebody who waits tables, and they have to accumulate working capital over the course of the month in order to pay for things like rent and so on down the line, these large-ticket items. Another example of someone that I knew that had to keep relatively large amount of working capital was my uncle. A while back, he used to go ahead, and he lives in Alaska, and he used to work some of the fishing boats. He used to work the crab boats. And what happens in that kind of situation is that your income is very punctuated. It comes all at once. Once you get off the boat and the catch has been sold and the boat has been cleaned and transitioned over. And so what happens at that point, he has this huge spike in income. And what he does with that one is he takes a truck and drives up to Anchorage and basically loads up the truck with inventory, all the stuff that he needs. So again, the secret to what is the right amount of working capital has to do with how closely your expenses and your revenue are correlated with each other. If they're really closely correlated with each other, as one moves up, the other one moves up, you can get away with relatively small amounts. And if they're not strongly correlated with each other, you can't say that when one one's up, the other one will move up, then you tend to have larger amounts of working capital. Now, the other issue that we have with this measure of working capital as a difference is that as a difference, you don't get a hold of scale. Individually, you guys can say, well, I'm just one person. I only have $500 worth of working capital that I have to deal with. But you can see that something like a larger family may go ahead and have larger amounts of working capital required. Scale up to a firm. If you're talking about a large business, you can see working capital on the scale of billions of dollars. Now, because that difference, current assets less current liabilities, is not scale invariant, what we're doing with these accounting ratios is actually turning it into a ratio. We're going ahead and saying that we're taking, for the current ratio, current assets over current liabilities. So the liabilities are in the denominator. Now, as a consequence, you're looking at a bunch of numbers that are on the scale of 1. Okay? And so what you're checking to see then, and here's going to be the probability interpretation of our current ratio, is that you're looking at the probability that a firm will have to either sell an asset or take out a loan to meet current expenditures. Now let's go ahead and relate this back to our own personal working capital. If you're in one of those situations where you have insufficient working capital, say you go to the grocery store, you're trying to pick up a chicken or something along those lines, and your checking account is below, you can't withdraw anymore, you have essentially two choices. Choice number one, you whip out a different card, a credit card, and basically take out a loan to meet those current expenditures, the chicken. The other thing that you can do is you can quickly go online and sell something on eBay. Effectively, what you're doing is you're selling an asset. So you know that when working capital starts getting close to that ragged edge, that the firm has to do one of those two things. Again, it's either sell an asset or take out a loan to meet current expenditures. Well, where that line is going to vary a lot depending upon what industry you're in. So again, if you're looking at an industry that has lots and lots and lots of its revenues that are focused in a certain part of the year, you'll find that they hold on to larger amounts of working capital. You can think of this as something along the lines of retail. On the other hand, if you have an industry where the revenue is constant throughout the year or fairly closely correlated with expenses, you can think of this not as, you know, clothing retail, but something along the lines of a grocery store, you can see them holding relatively small amounts of working capital. And we're going to mess around with the large component of that, which is inventory, a little bit later. So what you know for sure with the current ratio is if the current ratio drops below 1, you know for sure that the current liabilities are larger than the current assets. And so you know for sure that the firm needs to do something relatively soon in order to get more current assets. You can think of it as cash. So you know that they're either going to sell an asset or they're going to take out a loan. Now, just because that current ratio is above 1 doesn't mean that they aren't necessarily going to do something similar. For some firms, a ratio like 1.05 or 1.1 is really, 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 really safe. You can think of this as a lot of banks work out that way. So if you're looking at any time you have a balance sheet on a bank and you start calculating what the current ratio is, you're going to find out it's something that's relatively close to 1 because that's mostly what they deal with on their assets. On the other hand, some other kinds of firms, ones that actually hold significant inventories for whatever reason, they're going to have some large current ratios, and that current ratio can be something along the lines of 1.3, and they're already going to be reacting to it. Okay? So in general, what you're going to see is that low current ratio means that there's this threat that's going to happen. Now, that doesn't mean that a high current ratio is always going to be a good thing. You remember, if you have lots of current assets, what we're primarily saying is that you have lots of cash. And cash is an expensive thing to hold because it's something which is extremely liquid, meaning you're in short-run markets, and the return that you get in short-run markets is usually fairly low. You get some really, really low interest rates there, and your big returns generally come from making some longer-term investments. So anytime you see high current ratios, you don't think that, oh, this is always a good thing. Think of, look at all those opportunities they're passing up by holding on to cash. Now, I've been talking about this as if the only thing you should be concerned about is that current ratio, but it turns out that the quick ratio is also valuable too. And what's different about the two is what's in the numerator. The difference between the current ratio and the quick ratio is the current ratio has all current assets. And what the quick ratio does is it subtracts out those inventory balances. And so a different treatment of the inventory. What's going on with the current ratio is that it treats your inventory as if they are valued at their purchase price. And the quick ratio treats your inventory as if nobody values it at all. Now, if you think about inventories, they're likely to be someplace in between. There's some components of your inventory that you should be able to sell for what you bought them for or for more. And you can think about it as something along the lines of, you know, like a bunch of lumber. Usually you can sell lumber for what you bought it for. Or hardware, and I'm talking about screws and things like that. Again, you can usually sell those things for what you bought them for. Main thing is there's usually a fairly thick market for those things. Lots and lots and lots of buyers and sellers. And people are usually looking for them. Just because they were in inventory for a while doesn't mean that they're necessarily bad. But there are many other kinds of inventory items that are kind of specific to your firm and are less valuable to others. The classic example I have of this one is going to be letterhead. Your letterhead has your firm's name on it, and nobody else is going to want your letterhead. It's not something that's going to be valuable to them, and so what you're going to find out that that portion of your inventory isn't worth very much. Now, if any of you have ever sold off a bunch of inventory because you're closing down a firm, you know that, you know, for about half of it, you can get a little bit more than what you paid for it. For about 20% more, you can get probably about 20% less. And you end down at the bottom, you're going to end up with stuff that you basically almost have to give away for free or it's salvage. So reality is always going to be that your measurement of the adequacy of working capital is going to be someplace between that current and the quick ratio. Now, oftentimes you're going to find out it doesn't really matter. And when it doesn't really matter is when your inventories are small, okay? If your inventories are large, you have to think deeply about the decision. But there are plenty of industries where the inventories are so small, the difference is always going to be minuscule. And even if it's not minuscule, it really doesn't matter. And a classic example I have is my own particular business, which is going to be a simple consulting firm. Now, my inventory are just, you know, relatively small things. It's a little bit of coffee. It's a case of paper. It's a couple of printer cartridges. And that's about it. And relative to everything in my firm, that's just small potatoes. It's almost pocket change, of course, except for the printer ink. But the thing is that because those inventories are so small, it really isn't going to matter at all which one you look at, the current or the quick ratio.